Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Okay, everybody, this is Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, where we believe if you want to change your life, you got to change your mind about your life. And we want to throw out a big shout to Mental Health News Radio Network and Kristen Sonata Walker for creating this platform for us to share our voices and to help others heal. I'm excited today because we have Miss Rachel Grant with us. She is author of Beyond Surviving, The Final Stage of Recovering from Sexual Abuse. She's also has Rachel Grant Coaching, where she helps people heal from their traumatized childhoods. And I'm going to let Rachel say a little bit about herself and where she can be found, and tell us a little bit about yourself, Rachel.
Cool. Thank you for having me, Johnny. It's nice to be here with you again. And hello, everyone listening. Yes, I am. The best way to find me and connect with me is at rachelgrantcoaching.com. And from there, you can learn more about the Beyond Surviving program. I really focus my work with survivors of sexual abuse who are at that place in their journey where they're just sick and tired of feeling broken and unfixable and are really ready to find the skills and tools that will support them in breaking free of the past and being able to move on with their lives. And so that's the work I get to do every day with men and women all around the country and the world. And of course, this program is really born out of my own journey and my own experience with sexual abuse and other traumas throughout my, you know, adulthood, childhood, and adulthood.
Wow. I really appreciate you for doing what you're doing and the work that you do, and I really honor what you do, and I am grateful to feel kind of like a part of it with you and doing these shows and having discussions
for sure.
With you.
So, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, Johnny.
I am excited about our topic today. We're going to talk about how once you're traumatized by sexual abuse and other abuses as a child, how that changes our belief system and the way we look at the world, and then how our belief system changes how we act. So, and what we do with ourselves in the world. So, Rachel, you want to say a little bit of something about how the trauma changes the way we believe and move forward in our lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in my journey of healing, I certainly was, you know, navigating a couple of different things and trying different resources and doing a variety of different healing modalities. But it was really when I was completing my master's in counseling psychology and I began to study neuroscience that things really started to click in place for me. I started to have a much better understanding of what was happening for me on a neurological level as a result of trauma. And I became really obsessed with that question and trying to understand exactly how the brain is impacted by trauma and what that tells us about how we can then heal and move forward. And so I often am talking about, you know, how we take charge of our trauma brain. How do we heal on a neurological level? And, you know, and what systems need to be repaired and how we go about doing that. One of the things that I began to understand is if we think about the brain like this big highway, we have billions and billions of neurons that are, you know, popping around up there. And whenever we are having experiences, these neurons are firing off and creating connections with each other. And these connections are what we call neuronal pathways. And when these neuronal pathways are, you can think of it kind of like being lit up, if you will. Whenever a neuronal pathway is activated, that's what, you know, produces a memory, a thought, a reaction, a response. For example, The very first time you have pumpkin pie. Can you think of that time, Johnny? The first time you had pumpkin pie, or maybe a recent time you had pumpkin pie?
I'm imagining that my first time was when I was at a Thanksgiving dinner at home.
Right? Okay. So as soon as I say pumpkin pie, what's happening in your brain and everybody's brain who's listening is you start to imagine pumpkin pie, and the brain goes, oh yeah, like where did I have pumpkin pie? Who was there? What do I remember about that? You might think, oh, like warm or comforting or yummy, or maybe you didn't like it and you think, yuck, gross, I don't like it at all. And so just by saying the word pumpkin pie, I activated a certain neuronal pathway for you. And not only the memory, but all the associations that go along with that memory. Now, the same exact thing happens when we are experiencing trauma and abuse. The brain is taking in the information and the data that's there around us, the sights, the sounds, the smells, the experience, and associations are being created. And then in the present day, if something happens, that same exact neuronal pathway is lit up again. So even if there isn't any threat or there isn't any danger, the brain doesn't know that. The brain just goes, well, this looks or sounds or feels similar to that thing, which was dangerous or bad or painful or hurtful. And so let's, you know, watch out for that. And all of those trickle down effects of the PTSD symptoms like panic and anxiety and dissociation and all of that can get activated as a result. When I began to understand this, I thought, okay, I need to build some exit ramps. I need to learn how to get off of these pathways. How do I, you know, eliminate these pathways that are no longer serving me so I don't get triggered by certain things? Or if I do end up on a particular road or in a certain activation, how do I exit it? How do I minimize it or reduce it? And that's really where a lot of the strategies and techniques that I teach in the Beyond Surviving program come into play, because there's so many different ways that we can do that. And I've kind of compiled my favorite ones, I guess you would say, in the program. So I'll just pause there. That's a lot. And then, you know.
Well, my mind is immediately connected to A Course in Miracles, because that has been my pathway to my healing. And so much of what you were saying ties into that. And, you know, like, this is a course in mind training. And I've had, in my own recovery from my sexual abuse and my traumatized childhood, I've had to learn to rethink everything. So that, because when I did a show with Dr. Eric Gentry, he said two things that were very important to me about being a traumatized child. He says, first off, we are immediately robbed of hope. And And then after that, and in that place of being robbed of hope, the world becomes an unsafe place to live. And then as we move forward, everything that we're stimulated by, we respond to or react to with fear. And it's either fight or flight. So we have to learn to pause before we go on what I heard you saying, that neural pathway that says, oh no, this is not safe. We have to learn to pause and say, wait a minute. Is that so?
Yeah, absolutely.
And retrain my reactions to life, basically, because for me, in my violent home with the sex abuse and the physical abuse, is like nothing was safe, nothing. So, yeah, I totally get what you're talking about, and I totally subscribe to it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, one of the things that that we would talk about in the Beyond Surviving program is what we call autopilot thinking. And so that's exactly it. You know, the brain at the end of the day is kind of lazy. The brain likes to just keep doing whatever it's been doing. It will change. It's also very pliable. But it takes intervention in order for the brain to change. It's not going to do it of its own accord. And so what happens over time is that, you know, our thoughts have a direct impact, I really believe, on everything in our life. And so for survivors of abuse and trauma, we end up with certain patterns of thought that end up taking us, you know, down certain roads. And so we have these autopilot thoughts, and the brain just gets trained to go in that direction, immediately. So, you know, you see, you know, someone with a particular hair color, or you smell a certain scent of cologne, or, you know, something around you happens, the brain doesn't want to like take the time to really consider, like, is this different from that other time? It just goes, oh, that looks similar enough. So autopilot straight into fear, panic, anxiety, I'm in danger. And so learning to pause, that's exactly right, hitting the pause button and stop that process. And one of the ways that we can do that is just by simply saying what I call positive opposites. We don't have to believe the positive opposite. It's just a matter of using language as a way to interrupt that autopilot thinking. So if you're there and you're having an autopilot negative thought like, you know, nobody's ever going to love me. There's an opportunity there to pause and say, some people love me. Or if you're having an autopilot thought like, I'm stupid. A great positive opposite is I'm smart. I'm intelligent. And of course, there's more work to do when it comes to really retraining the brain and getting out of negative belief systems. But that little simple technique is enough to start exiting off of those neuronal pathways, those autopilot thoughts, and lead us to different outcomes, which is really ultimately the idea here.
I love what you're saying. I do, because I believe our thoughts totally create our life. And if we don't monitor those thoughts, if we don't manage those thoughts, they take us down rabbit trails all the time to some type of self-destruction. So if we can learn, I know I spent 5 years writing a letter to myself from my God, of my understanding, from him to me. And in that process, I changed my internal dialogue and the way I talked to myself. And I became more loving and caring of myself. But that was so difficult with all those messages that I had picked up as a kid growing up, that I wasn't ever going to be loved. And people that say they love you, they are the worst ones to try to trust. That was what I grew up with. Because
I see. Sure.
The people that were supposed to be taking care of me were the ones that were hurting me the most. So no, don't tell me you love me. So I didn't trust it. So in my own recovery and my own healing, I've had to learn to pause and say, wait a minute, that's not my grandmother. That's not my dad. That's whatever. I've had to learn to, okay, let me sit in this for a moment before I just run and destroy what could be a really good thing here.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, you know, I think that part of what really began to help me in this process was, first of all, recognizing that I had some say about this, that I could put my hands back on the steering wheel of my brain, that I wasn't at the mercy of my brain and the thoughts and the memories and these sorts of things, but that they were very real and very doable. Not like, oh, this is going to take me 8 hours. I've got to sit in meditation for 8 hours, you know. Takes all of 30 seconds to do a positive opposite. And when I began to understand that, I just continued to dive deeper and deeper into what are the neurological processes that are most affected by trauma, what are the parts of the brain that are the most affected by trauma, and how do we continue to heal that? Because ultimately, like, if we really think about it, Johnny, like, here's the son of a bitch of all of this. The abuse and the actual moment of abuse and trauma sucks. But it's no longer happening. What we are being tormented by, what is causing our suffering, is no longer the moment of abuse trauma. It's everything that we came to believe as a result of the abuse and trauma, which means that's totally up to us to change. And yeah, is it fair that we're the ones that have to do that work? Not really. But if we want to recover our lives, if we want to take our lives back, that's the work to be done. And there's nothing that stops anybody from doing that work aside from, there are some circumstances, I suppose, that could get in the way of that. But a lot of it just comes down to intention, consistency, and of course, having support, because it's not easy work. And so there's times where it feels hopeless, or times where it feels really hard, or is this really working? And so making sure that we're surrounded by people who are, you know, holding hope for us, especially in those moments when we're not feeling that way, and guiding us and supporting us and encouraging us to keep going. That's, you know, been a huge part of my healing as well, for sure.
I know for myself, when I reached a point where I could speak about what had happened, and when I did, I was fortunate enough that I was surrounded by people that could say, yeah, me too. And in that moment, and then and not that exact moment, usually they had to go a little further and share a little piece of what they had gone through before I truly trusted that they had been there and done that. But in the space of that identification and that connection, a little ray of hope got to shine into me. And I got to feel, even if it was an instant of like, maybe I don't have to live in this crap the rest of my life. And learning how to rethink it I think part of what I picked up from what you just said is how to get into this moment. I'm not seven anymore. This isn't happening, but I still have the effect of it. And then taking responsibility to say, okay, I can move through this if I'm willing to change my mind about some things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I love what you just said there, because, you know, what it made me think of is the fact that as a result of trauma and abuse, a lot of us end up with particular belief systems about other people, about asking for support, about trust. And those are some of the initial belief systems that we have to kind of conquer and find some wiggle room around, because that's what allows us to then get into community. Because we don't heal in isolation. There's no, you know, going off into, you know, I suppose maybe for some people they can do it, but not very many go off into the cave, you know, and just sit there in meditation, reflection, working on it. But most of the time what happens when we're in isolation is the negative brain, the trauma brain, becomes much, much louder. And so when we have community and support around us, then we're able to take charge of that trauma brain much more effectively.
One of the things that I've discovered, and not only in my own work, but in my attempt to work with others, is that we have such a tendency to think that if I can just go somewhere and sit down and be still, I'll figure this out. I can get me out of it. And I never could, because all I would do when I would go to that quiet place where I could sit, all I did was ruminate in the pain.
That's right.
The pain. And it got bigger and bigger, and I could not reduce it. Mm-hmm. But when I did find community, to coin your phrase, when I did find community of people that were, I don't want to say suffering, but struggling with the same issues, trying to learn how to be a complete adult with such a wounded child living inside me, that was a real task. And I couldn't, I never could have done it without help. I never could have done it without help.
For sure. Me either. So, yeah, you know, and I think this is where, when we start to think about the elements of trauma, the equation of trauma, if you will, we have the experience, we have the what happened, and then we have the beliefs that we develop as a result of that experience. I call those the stories. The stories that we come up with to try to explain why what happened happened. And then as a result of that, we have the outcomes, the choices, the behaviors, the actions. So I'll give you a little example of this. When I was 10 years old, my grandfather began abusing me. It's likely he abused me before that, but I usually just start at the age of 10 because that's where my most clear memories are. And I was a very cuddly kid, and I was sitting out on the front porch with him, cuddled up next to him like I always did when he began touching me. So in that moment, the what happened was he began touching me, abusing me. But my explanation, my story, as I, and I had many, many, many of them, but one of them was that happened because I was being too cuddly. That was my story. That was my belief. And so the outcome of that in my life was that I avoided being cuddly. I didn't want to be touched. I was withdrawn. I pulled back. Or even if I was engaged in physical touch, I wasn't really present. I was maybe physically there, but not mentally, emotionally there. And so when we look at this, these elements, the what happened, we can't change it. It's done. And the outcomes, the choices, the behaviors, the reactions, we can't change those either because those are an outcome. They're a result of the combination of the what happened and the belief. So the only element in this entire thing that's actually changeable is the story. And that's why when I'm working with survivors, I very seldom work on a behavioral level. There are elements of that in the Beyond Surviving program, but only after they've really come to understand how to work with their stories and their beliefs. Because a lot of us, including myself, I'm just going to stop doing X. I am never going to do X again, right? Or I am going to start doing X, Y, or Z. But if we don't have the belief systems to back that up, then we just keep staying in the same loops. We keep getting the same results. And so that's why learning how to identify your stories and to challenge and transform those stories is, to my mind, the crux of, you know, the healing work.
Well, I have this equation that I work with, and it's almost like a mathematical equation of what happens with our mind, in my mind. And that is, a thought manifests a feeling, which becomes a belief, which then becomes a behavior, and then our behavior becomes our life. But it all goes back to what's the thought, which I'm relating to your story. What is the story I'm telling myself that is creating these patterns that I keep doing? Because they become patterns. And the pattern becomes incredibly habitual, if not addicted. And then it's like, okay, this pattern is, I have to be able to step back and usually with somebody's help and guidance and say, you know what? This behavior, this belief, this thought, they do not serve me. So now what thought can I come up with? What can I do to change the thought so I can change and follow it right down? And the next thing you know, I've changed my life. But if I just try to change my behavior,
then it's not going to work.
If I just change the behavior and I don't change the thought that does it, I'll end up doing the same thing, getting the same outcome from a different behavior, but because I haven't changed the source of it by changing.
For sure.
To tie into what you were saying, because I haven't changed the story about it. And if I just change the behavior, doesn't work. I go from being a cokehead to a meth head. So. I haven't really accomplished anything.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting to me is I certainly found myself saying this many times in my own journey, and I hear it quite often when I'm doing consultations with folks who are interested in the program. This is a very particular phrase that you'll hear from survivors. Well, it's always been this way, or I've been this way for so long. How can it possibly change? If we really dissect that, the only reason why you've been that way for so long is because you've had a particular belief or story for so long. And a belief or a story is not permanent. It's malleable. It's changeable. And so, yeah, you may have a lot of life and a lot of practice and a lot of years, you know, perfecting that belief and perfecting that story and making it such that it's always been this way. But there's no reason why it couldn't be some way different. And then, you know, after, you know, a couple of years of retraining the brain and putting in a different belief system, then you look back and you go, oh, this is the way it's always been. Right. But it's a new way. And that's, for me, really the heart and soul of the work that I do. It's really important to me that survivors of sexual abuse understand that trauma is not a life sentence. Now, I promise you, there are going to be people out there who are going to say that it is. And I think there are a lot of social reasons for that. I think there are a lot of economic reasons for that. And I think there are just some historical reasons for that. But, you know, I think there's a new mindset that's coming into the realm of trauma recovery that says, no, let's not buy into that myth anymore. Let's not give that credence, because there's just too much that we have choice about and too much that we have say about to counter that idea that we have to just be stuck this way. And just because we've been this way for a long time, we have to remain that way. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I'm the master of my mind, and my mind is the master of my life. And if I can work my way into owning that, part of the trickery of a traumatized mind for me is the lies that it tells and that I buy into. Yeah. It's like, well, I was abused because, and then I find reason and justification for the abuser. I find that and make it, because experience has been with that is like, I want to understand it. I want to understand. Mm-hmm. I want something to place mm-hmm. the blame on. I want to say, I was abused because. There is no because. You know, and it doesn't, it's so incredibly empowering for me. And that's what it's about, because when I'm a victim and I lock into being a victim, I am absolutely powerless. Mm-hmm. But when I take the power back by taking responsibility for my mind today, then I can start to move away from all that. And I can start to change those lies that I bought into and told myself. Some of the lies I ended up buying into, I made up myself. Nobody ever told me, but I was trying to reason with insanity. You can't reason with insanity.
That's right. So true, Johnny.
But I had to come to understand that. And once I did, and I'm like, you know what? That is insane for me to believe that I was a 7-year-old child and I did anything to cause this.
Mm-hmm.
Anything.
I mean, Johnny, isn't this one of the, like, the wildest things? I mean, I'd love to get your thought about this too, because something that that's been on my mind lately is that word trickery. I love that word trickery, because I have a Facebook group, Healing from Sexual Abuse, and there's a little over 4,000 people in that group, and it's growing by, you know, the rate of, you know, about 100 people a month, because, you know, as we know, sexual abuse is an epidemic in this country and worldwide. That aside, that could be a whole other tangent that I could go on off on, but you know, you see the same things over and over again. It's my fault. I feel ashamed. The stories, the beliefs, there are themes, there are commonalities. And I have such compassion and respect for it, because I had the same themes and I had the same stories and I fell into the same patterns. But there's something that's really, like, that I haven't been able to sort out or figure out at this moment. Like, what would it take for us all to go, like, wait a second, we've all just been bamboozled. If you have that lie, and if you have that idea, and I have that idea, then there must be something at work here. There must be some trickery at work, if you will, because we can't all have the same outcomes and beliefs, and it be, I don't know exactly how to, 'cause again, I'm still kind of formulating this idea in my mind, so I don't even know exactly how to phrase it. But I don't know. Are you feeling what I'm saying there, Johnny? Is that making sense at all?
I am feeling it. Man, we could do a whole nother show on this, because for me, it is not a coincidence that we all end up with the same storyline. And the story itself may change. The details of the story. Why did this? Because I sat in my granddad's lap, or I did this because I held my grandmother's hand. But the outcome and the basic story stays the same. And for me, that's where my Course in Miracles stuff really helps me a lot, because for me, there's a deeper part of that. There's that dark part of every human being's mind that tries to keep us in the darkness and away from the light. And even though it seems incredibly clever and incredibly intelligent, it does the same thing with everybody. It's not very creative. You know, and that's why we end up with the same story, because in my mind, you and I right now connecting on that story is like, okay, you and I right now, we just discovered together that there's something else going on here.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be a coincidence that the last 100 sexually abused children I talked to all felt like somehow it was their fault.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's a lot that, you know, we understand about child psychology, about survival, about what is happening on a neurological level, about just the very fact that, you know, shame is easier to live with than a lack of hope. And that can be driving, you know, this propensity towards the, we're talking very specifically about the kind of the it's my fault belief. What's interesting to me is that when we are adults and we're aware and working with this particular belief, the kind of the work, the effort that we have to put into unraveling that belief. And I wonder sometimes if there's a possibility for us to at some point go, this collective belief is a collective lie, and that's all I need to know. Like, I don't need to do any internal work. I don't need to do anything other than just go, well, shit, if you believe that and I believe that, then we both got duped. You know, forget it. All right. On with something else.
We both got duped.
Yeah. Well, I've never said it that way, but okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we did.
Kind of like that. And there's kind of like that, isn't it?
There's a world covered with those of us that were duped. We were duped.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, okay, now I have realized this is a lie. Now let me unfold the truth. And for me, it's not so much about what I learn as it is about what I unlearn. Because in the process of trying to survive,
that's right,
in the process of trying to survive as an abused child, I told myself all kinds of lies that I thought were keeping me safe.
Exactly.
I thought by not trusting people that I was protected, when it was just the opposite. I love that you said you were duped, because that's what happened. Mm-hmm. We were duped. I was duped into believing that if I trusted people, they were going to hurt me, and nobody was trustworthy.
Yeah. It's kind of like, and again, I'm just exploring this idea, so bear with me, folks, because it's not fully formulated, but it's kind of like, imagine if as a child, you grew up in a home where you were told that the sky is green. And so you're a child, you have no resource to do anything but take the guidance of the adults who are in charge of you. So you have a belief that the sky is green, and you wander around and around, the sky is green. And then as an adult, you do some reading, you research a little bit, you maybe even just look up one day and go, holy shit, the sky is blue. That they lied to me. You know, with a circumstance like that, we wouldn't go any further. We would just go, oh, that's a lie. That's not true. Okay, the sky is blue. And it would just integrate immediately, right? We would switch from one belief to another belief. Sky green, sky blue. Done. As soon as we name it and identify it as a lie or a false truth. What's fascinating to me is that that process does not happen when it comes to these internal belief systems. And I think a function of that is because it's survivalist, right? We have this idea that these lies somehow keep us safe or protect us. And so we have to kind of get past that layer. But I guess I'm just kind of, you know, toying with this idea that maybe one day recovery will look just as simple as that. You know it's a lie. Don't spend any more time on it. Move on. Just like we would with any other lie that we see out in our life.
I love what how you came into that and that thing about why can't we just say, okay, that was a lie and be done? You know, and how you talked about we believe the lie is keeping us safe, that it, the lie is protecting me. And I think part of it is, it's kind of like Linus with his blanket. It's like he believed the blanket would bring him comfort, and it did.
Right.
But the thing is, we use these things, these stories that you were talking about, we use those stories to protect ourselves. And come to find out, those stories that were protecting us, those blankets that we wrapped ourselves in, were filled up with fire ants. And those stories themselves were eating away at our soul. Because that's where I landed with all this. It's like all of that darkness that I allowed to be part of my psyche was destroying me under the guise of keeping me safe. Mm-hmm. And they kept the... to me, that thing that you talked about earlier, the community, to me, healing comes in community. Healing comes in connection. And when I am surrounding myself in those stories, I'm keeping everybody away.
Yeah.
Because nobody can be trusted. Nobody's safe. And at the same time, we yearn for that so much. I'm going to venture a guess here that that little girl that was you, that was that cuddly little girl, she's still there.
She is on the scene. Let me tell you, Johnny. Let me tell you, because see, part of my work was unraveling the lies. And I love the word you used earlier, unlearning. So I unlearned that cuddling is bad and dangerous. And I learned that it's amazing. And I am like a master cuddler. Okay. So, and this is exactly what I mean by when people say, well, why can't I do this? And I really want to change that. Or I really want to be able to, I could have tried to cuddle, you know, I could have gone to cuddle parties. I could have studied cuddling. I could have done all sorts of things. But until the belief about cuddling changed, my experience with cuddling would not. And so that's why this the change and transformation and healing is on the level of belief. You know, the story of our life will not change until we change the stories of our life. Period.
Wow. I'm gonna share a real quick example of how that worked in my life. I grew up thinking I killed my mom because I didn't kiss her goodbye on her deathbed. I literally grew up thinking I killed her.
Yeah.
Many years later, I'm like 28 years old. I'm going to therapy for the first time, and I'm trying to turn all this around. And I tell that story to my therapist. And she guided me through a visualization where that little boy climbed up on the bed and kissed his mother goodbye.
Nice.
That changed everything for me. Did it change the story of me not kissing her by? No, but it changed my inside story, my internal story about right. That little boy wanted to kiss his mom, but he was scared because she looked so sick.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So by changing that story, I changed who I was. That changed everything about who I was.
Yeah, what a release of like guilt and blame and burden and all of that. That's right.
Yeah. So changing those stories, and people that are really into just what I call, well, what is cognitive therapy, just talking, they would say at this point, well, that's just denial. I don't care. Call it denial. Call whatever you call it. It made me a better person.
Right. Listen, if our beliefs and our thoughts are driving our experiences, then let's go ahead and make sure that the beliefs and thoughts we're picking and choosing are ones that empower us.
Right.
There's no reason to stay entrenched in a belief that, you know, either one of those could be true, right? Like they actually could either be true, but there's one that empowers you and helps you to create the life that you want to have. And there's one that keeps you entrenched in the past and in guilt and in shame and in blame. And that's a choice. People do that all the time. There are people who live their entire lives very much wedded to the stories of their past and what they came to believe in that moment. And I understand that it's hard, and I have so much compassion for it. And I'm also just a warrior that nobody actually gets stuck there, because we don't have to, and we can change the script. We can change the perspective and create and give ourselves access to so much more by doing so.
Right. Rachel, we were shooting for 30 minutes. We've gone over.
What'd we do? I didn't even look at the clock. I was just talking with Johnny. It's the time to talk. Well, that's awesome. All right. Let's wrap it up. Okay. Let's do it.
I just want to say thank you so much. This is our second time to be together on the show. And both times I walked away giddy.
Because
this is what makes me feel alive today, is talking about how to heal. And helping others heal. I feel like a kid that just went to Disney World. I'm alive right now, and not just sitting around poking the remote control. So I want to say, I'm going to put you on the spot basically here on the show and say, can we do this again?
Of course. You know, anytime. Okay. I am down.
And yes, thank you, Rachel, for what you bring.
Thanks,
to the world,
Johnny.
Who you are in the world and all the people that you're serving. I'm so grateful to know you. Okay, this has been Morph Into a New You. I'm Johnny Calloway. I'm going to ask you to go to my website and look for my books and what all I'm doing. I've got a lot of other podcasts on there that I've done with people like Rachel, not just like Rachel, but people that do the same kind of work that we all do. And I want to say thank you again to Mental Health News Radio Network. And Rachel, would you give them all the information that they need for how they can find you?
Yeah, head on over to rachelgrantcoaching.com. That's the best place to start. You can also find me on Facebook at the Healing from Sexual Abuse group. Just type that into the search and you'll find the group. And feel free to reach out, coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com. Happy to be a support, a guide, however I can be. So would love to connect with you. Don't hesitate to reach out.
Thank you, Rachel. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Have a nice night. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.